Real Marketing Rap is brought to you by Tim Bush and me, Joe Edwards, and we talk about everything marketing. We'll tell you as it is, jargon free and no BS. We'll have guests every week from high rollers to first starters, all from different industries and disciplines within the marketing world. We're here to set the record straight with nothing but marketing realness.
So Joe, we're finally here. We're actually doing a podcast. How about this?
It's a slightly crazy. So what, we've known each other for like, I don't know, probably about 10 years, and I can count probably at least on two hands the amount of ideas we've had about doing something over those 10 years and never actually managed to get to do it. And I guess just so for the listeners, Tim and I met over Twitter. It sounds a bit like kind of online dating, but it's not. Then we finally hooked up at kind of a marketing conference. And we've just always, I guess, shared a love for marketing in whatever kind of guise it is, you know. And it's wicked that we're actually finally managed to pull our thumbs out of our arse and actually get on and do something together. So I'm really excited about this as a kind of a project, and also like just hooking up with all these awesome like marketing people that we're going to be able to get on the show, given the network that we've got these days.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to getting a whole wide range of guests on the show, not just marketeers, but kind of yoga teachers, operations folks, entrepreneurs, VCs. It's going to be a really great opportunity just to kind of extract as much information out of these guys as possible. So yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. And yeah, when I mentioned to my wife that we were doing this show, she's like, oh yeah, is that your imaginary friend? Hence the whole kind of like we met on Twitter and stuff like that. It's just kind of funny. Yeah, anyone that I meet online are imaginary friends.
Yeah. I think I've met her like, what, three times or something.
I hope I'm not that imaginary anymore. Anyone that I meet online is an imaginary friend, but it's kind of funny. But there we go. So obviously she has met you before, but when I actually show her this recording, it's like, look, this guy is real.
Yeah, love it, love it. Wicked, wicked. So we might as well get on with the interview then.
Yeah, sounds good. So yeah, let's dive straight into it. It's going to be a great episode. So to kick off this first episode of the Real Marketing Rap podcast, we have an amazing guest, Dave Coplin. I used to actually work with him at Microsoft, and he recently left Microsoft to join a business called Envisions, which actually he is the CEO for, or the Chief Envisioning Officer, which he calls himself, which is pretty cool. And he's going to be talking about a whole range of different topics this week, but predominantly focused around AI and machine learning and what that really means to marketeers. He's got a couple of great books, which I highly recommend checking out, and he references those during the interview.
So Dave, thanks for joining us on this first episode of The Real Marketing Rap. Really appreciate you taking the time to join us. And wonder if it's worth, just for the sake of our listeners, just to give a quick intro in terms of who you are and a little kind of potted history. Obviously, we've worked at Microsoft together for quite a few years, and we both recently left to start new adventures, etc. But yeah, it'd be great if you could just give us a quick intro on who you are.
Sure, Tim, be really happy to. So first of all, thanks for having me. My name is Dave Coplin, and I now front a company called The Envisioners. I have a comedy job title, which I invented and I'm immensely proud of, which is the Chief Envisioning Officer, the
Amazing.
One and only. Yeah,
absolutely. Love that. I love that.
And the reason I did that, and Tim, you will know I did this a while ago, was, you know, I work in a technology industry with people who are fixated on the technology and the products. And I think what's far more fascinating, if you really want to understand where things are going to go, is not to really understand the technology, but instead to understand the humans that use it. So, you know, for the last few years, certainly for the last 5 or 6 years of my role at Microsoft, and now this company that I've spun out and we're running full time, the focus is all about projecting about what a human being is going to do in the future. How does a human of the future going to want to live, work and play? Because I think if we and brands understand where the humans are going to be, we can be much more mindful about the technology they require. And then I realized that at a certain level, if you like, my job now is essentially about the future of humanity. And I thought, given that's such a bold aim, I deserve a job title with a certain degree of pomposity. And I think you'll see I've achieved that.
I think you have. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
With bells on, I think, as well.
So, and what's funny is, you know, I've had this job title long enough now. It started out as a joke, but now actually I'm taking it seriously. So I think the last laugh's probably on me.
Love it, love it. And for the purpose of this this episode, we're really looking at kind of both AI and machine learning, and I think that snaps really nicely in terms of kind of what you're doing with your new project around how technology can really shape and impact people's lives. But of course, for many people, AI machine learning is still a bit unclear in terms of what it really means and what it stands for and the impact that it can actually have. So it'd be great to get a little sense in your mind around what both of those kind of technologies are. Obviously, they're kind of interlinked in many ways, but is it possible just to get a quick kind of view from you in terms of what those two technologies are and why they mean so much to us at this given time?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, Tim, and I think there's a lot of confusion just broadly about the terms. I mean, for me, the terms are different for the artificial intelligence machine learning, but we use them typically in the same context. So machine learning is possibly the most important one of the two in the short term, and all machine learning is really is statistical-based pattern recognition. We've been using machine learning technologies for many, many years, and in particular, it's a huge part of our consumer lifestyle. So every time you use, for you know, classic examples of search engine, you're using machine learning. Artificial intelligence is less about the pattern recognition, and it's more about connecting the patterns to derive some kind of insight, some kind of action that you might take on. And the sort of the caricature of artificial intelligence is kind of like the Terminator or 2001: A Space Odyssey. Now, that's a really special thing. That's when the algorithms start to think for themselves. And we'd love to, you know, believe that as a concept. But in my view, and certainly the research I've done, that thing is decades away. It's a concept called the singularity. And what I find is when I'm talking to people about AI and machine learning is to really sort of break the term down. And AI in particular, the two things I love about artificial intelligence is the first is actually it's not artificial. It's a real thing, right? It's a bunch of code that runs on servers. So it's not artificial. And the second is it's actually not intelligent. You know, but apart from that, as a term, you know, it's like, even the bloke who invented the term the artificial intelligence back in the 50s, he kind of apologizes every day now. Like, oh, I'm really sorry. You know, at the time it felt like a good thing, but I can see how I've not helped. And I think the most helpful thing in terms of machine learning and AI is really just to think of it as a new form of automation. So just like 200 years ago, if I turned up to your weaving mill, I was going to disrupt your industry because I got this machine called the spinning Jenny. It was going to automate the process of weaving. Well, we're going to do the same now, but I won't be turning up to your weaving mill. It won't be a mechanical process that I'm automating. It will be a cognitive process. So it gives us the ability to automate established ways of thinking, established patterns. So, you know, think about things that happen in businesses every day. And let's pick on some easy examples. Things like call centers. Certainly the first few levels of a call center, it's a very clear process. There is a specific question. There is an answer to that question that can be automated. But it kind of goes further. If you think about, sort of other business processes, things like the legal industry, things like the accounting industry, things like the advertising industry, many of these things are processes which could be automated by AI. And that's where the excitement starts to come. And the point of doing all of this is just the power you get, the insight you get from this pattern recognition. So we're familiar with it in terms of marketing. We know what it means in terms of search. But if you start to extrapolate it out a bit further, this ability to spot patterns in lots of data enables us to build, you know, services that will not just change our relationship with technology, they'll change our relationship with each other as human beings. And the classic example I'll give you is, you know, real-time speech-to-speech language translation. This is a concept that is powered by machine learning. It's made available by companies like Google and Microsoft and others. And is now out there in the wild. You can do it using your phone. Google have some earbuds that work with their phone for $140 that mean I can communicate with somebody in their language, even though I'm speaking my language, in near real time. Think about how that changes
our
society.
That's insane, isn't it?
It is
just insane. I saw that recently and was just kind of blown away by the fact we've got it at near real time.
And I think I've got a 12-year-old boy, and I just think, think about his future. You know, he's going to emerge from his education into a world where he can speak, you know, up to 152 languages fluently. Wow. As a result of this technology. It's going to change his life. You know, it's going to change the world. And so that's why I think we have to think about this stuff. And you know, there are lots of applications for marketers, lots of applications. I don't think that there's an organization or a role or even an individual that won't be fundamentally touched by the potential of this technology.
And you think about the shift that's going to have in, you know, what we're going to do with all the translators.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, it does have such a huge impact, all this stuff. And obviously, it always happens a bit more organically and slower than we maybe expect, but it does, it will happen over time.
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me, there's a lovely Bill Gates quote, which is, we always overestimate what can happen in the next 2 years and completely underestimate what will happen in the next 10.
Yeah.
And I think this sort of language translation is one of those great examples.
Yeah, definitely.
So I guess on the subject of that and the kind of time frames, I mean, I'm really excited about the potential that AI and machine learning offers kind of the marketing kind of piece pretty broadly, but particularly around the kind of experiences that we can deliver. You know, just take the kind of translation piece and the personalization opportunities around kind of guided paths, etc. And you know, I think the potential for that to kind of scale and kind of you know, broaden the impact of what we can do in that space is really cool. But I guess, you know, from your perspective, how far are we really away until, you know, your average marketeer is going to be able to start embracing some of the opportunities that these technologies can offer? Because you know, although marketeers are typically pretty forward thinking, you know, they sometimes can be a little resistant to change. And obviously, this does require you know, potentially a different set of skills, a different mindset, and I guess also the confidence in these technologies as well. So if you're going to, you know, empower an organization to kind of benefit from these technologies, you've got to kind of trust what the output of this technology is and the information it's providing. And I think sometimes we can be a little slow to respond to that kind of stuff. So hey, it'd be good to get your thoughts on that and kind of what sort of time frames do you think we're realistically looking at before marketeers can kind of wholeheartedly kind of embrace this?
Yeah, I mean, that's a brilliant question, Tim. And it comes back to sort of a definition, really, of what you think adoption means. And so on one level, if adoption is, you know, marketeers using technologies like machine learning, I would argue it's already happening today. And it's happening today for things like SEO, you know, or that whole side is all machine learning. We're doing it today. The way that we think about marketing has fundamentally changed in the last 10 years as a result of machine learning technology, i.e. search engines. But the more exciting part of this is when we use the potential of machine learning to fundamentally change the relationship and engagement with the individual that we're interested in, the consumer. And let me, you know, give you an example. So, you know, we're familiar with a world today of targeted advertising. So I go to a search engine, let's say arbitrarily a bit of me plumbing's broken at home. So I go and search for the bit I need or, you know, to find what's broken and then the bit I need. And that's great, right? So I find a part, I can order it. But then for the next 6 weeks, the internet thinks I'm a plumber. And that's really stupid when you think about it, because the internet knows that, A, I'm not a plumber. It also knows that I've bought the bit. And if my searches stop for that particular topic and that particular problem, they can probably make a reasonable assumption that I've fixed the bloody plumbing. So now they can go on and advertise something else to me. Or think about it in perhaps a better example, as a retail example. If I spend, you know, 3 months researching which amplifier I'm going to buy for my stereo, you know the point at which I've bought it because I stopped searching for it. At that point, don't show me any more ads for bloody amplifiers. You should be showing me ads for speaker cable or speakers or something that will complement what I've already done. And I think there's this really interesting transition that the marketing industry will have to take at some point in the future, which is to transition from an analog way of working, so the engagement where actually it's all a bit dumb and stupid, to a digital way of working, where actually I start to piece together all of these different parts of context about the individual I care about. I take their location, their thing they did last time, the things that they like, the people they talk to, their emotional state, all of these things, and I build this rich, personalized engagement that hits the individual at exactly the right moment with exactly the right content. That's the nirvana, if you like, for where we're going with this stuff. And interestingly, the technology to do much of that stuff exists today, but the blocker, the barrier, is actually all around the principles of what it would mean to do that, the erosion of the potential erosion of privacy, the expectation of the consumer, the ability of the brand to do the right thing with the data. This is the battleground right now. And the marketers of the future, marketeers of the future will be the ones that figure out how to navigate, if you like, the philosophical and ethical implications of what we're doing rather than necessarily the technological implications.
Yeah, and I think that whole privacy kind of aspect is absolutely key. I mean, although it's not directly kind of relevant, it's funny, I was just having a conversation at the weekend around the fact that in the new iOS 11 update, there's a feature where if you're known to someone that you're sitting next to and wants to share your Wi-Fi network, they can just automatically join it. And I remember actually at Microsoft, that was a feature that was in, I think, Windows 8.1 or something, and it was an absolute uproar within the community, the fact that that could even happen. And it's amazing, you just fast forward a couple of years and, you know, a simple, albeit really useful feature like that is now, you know, embraced wholeheartedly. And, you know, I think obviously we're going to see some fundamental changes around privacy and people's appetite to kind of share and open up their data just to make some of these experiences more personalized and compelling for themselves. And I think if there's that trade-off, then, you know, I think, you know, users are kind of happier to do those kind of
things. I think there's another element to this as well, is when you think about the cost implications of landing stuff like this. So, you know, anecdotally, you can say personalization is going to kind of bring you kind of double-digit uplift on performance of, like, your marketing. But actually, the cost of doing that, and I wonder, is when you think about adoption as well and how you define adoption, is actually the cost of entry of this stuff. Like, programmatic has been another one of those kind of swear words, I think, that kind of came around in the media space, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And now a lot of people are kind of apologizing for overpromising and under-delivering on it slightly, and the cost implications of actually delivering programmatic into the business and then trying to get that uplift. So I'll be interesting to see when it becomes, you know, for me, adoption's about available to the masses understand it and kind of get it. So I wonder, it's that 2 and 10 year thing again. I wonder.
Yeah, I feel this stuff is, I mean, from a technology perspective, it's close enough right now. And I think to your availability point, you know, these are established services available in a number of different cloud networks that, you know, so you don't actually have to solve any of these problems yourself. You just buy them in and point them at your data.
Yeah.
But I do think, and Tim, this is really to your point, getting both the brands and the consumers in the right place, that they are aware of it and happy to use it. This is the key part. And I think this will take time, because I think it comes down to trust. And what brands are going to have to start doing is start to be really good about, A, being open and transparent. So if you give me your data, or if you engage with me in this way, this is what's going to happen. And then equally, they follow up that transparency with a very explicit value statement. So if you give me your data, this is what's going to happen. And then as an individual, you can choose whether you want to be part of that or not. And I think if brands start to do that, consumers will see the value. They will start to vote and say, do you know what, actually, you did amazing things with my data before. You can have a bit more and let's see what else you can do. And I think this becomes massively important in a world of chatbots and artificial agents who work on our behalf with brands to, you know, engage in a range of experiences or whatever it may be. And so I think this whole focus on the human side of it, and I would say it, right, because that's my focus too, but the whole focus on the human side is probably the biggest thing that we all need to give some time and thought to.
I was looking at a study probably about a year ago, and it does look like year on year we are seeing a shift in people being a little bit more open to the whole privacy thing. So it's quite interesting seeing how, you know, obviously the younger we are, the probably slightly more open we are to you know, privacy and that kind of stuff. It's maybe a sweeping generalization, but I think we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, and also, let's be clear, you know, none of this stuff means an erosion of you know, privacy or principles around privacy. If we do this right and properly, we actually end up with a much better state, and that is to hold the right kind of people accountable for the data use. So rather than the consumer, it should be the organizations that use the data. To, you know, build a regulatory environment that enables people to innovate with data rather than constrain their use. And then to give the consumer, the individual, the power to be confident that their data is being used for good and not for bad. And so I think we can move forward, but it does require a conversation with brands and marketers and technology companies and governments, as well as consumers. And we've got to get all of those people in the right place before we can really start to do it.
For sure. Yeah. And I think also there's, potential, and obviously we've got GDPR kind of fast approaching next year. But I think we're going to start seeing companies using kind of reputation and trust more as a kind of USP moving forward, because ultimately, if you're going to be selling a service that is based on you sharing data and that company using that data to create compelling experiences for you, then you obviously need to trust that the company that is using that data is managing it appropriately, safely, securely, and ethically, and all that good stuff. So I think actually there's almost like a bit of a perfect storm on the horizon around kind of the whole concept of privacy, trust, and while GDPR is obviously a little bit of an unknown entity in some ways, but I think actually it's actually a good kind of milestone to kind of use as a kind of basis to kind of frame this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So I'm mindful of time, and we're kind of getting to the end of our session here. I know that we've got a couple of other questions just to run through. Joe, I know there was something that you were to kind of.
I've got two questions, and I'm going to probably oversimplify them. And outside of marketing, because while marketing's great and we all love it, and it basically pays the bills, at least for ourselves. What's the kind of coolest thing you've seen in kind of AI and machine learning?
Well, I mean, there's a whole range of things, but I think one area where we're going to have a lot of, massive amount of impact that will do a massive amount of good is in healthcare. And I'll give you two examples that I've come across recently that are fantastic. The first is very straightforward, and actually it's a service that's being advertised now in the UK, which is powered by a technology called Babylon, which is basically using machine learning to have a dialogue with an individual about their health and well-being. So instead of me booking to go to my doctor, to my GP, I simply have a conversation on my smartphone with a chatbot, essentially.
Yeah.
And, the application, you can try it, you can download it, you can find it in the App Store for both Android and iOS.
Doing that now.
Absolutely amazing. Well, I went to a lecture at the BBC, and I met with the founder, and he was talking about it. My son was with me, and he now has this app on his phone. And that, that's when he's looking for insight on his health, state of health, if he's got a cold or whatever, that's his first port of call. And it is that they've thought through, funnily enough, good marketers, they've really understood the customer journey. So they take you through all of the questions, they give you a view of what they think is wrong with you, and then they'll help you to the next step. They'll help you book a GP appointment if you need to see a real doctor, or they'll help you find the nearest pharmacy if you actually need to get. So it's really, really good application of machine learning insight. Yeah. So I think healthcare, that one insight. The other example, and this goes to the other end of the extreme, is some amazing work that's being done by the likes of companies like Google. So it'd be DeepMind, really, for Google or Alphabet, and also Microsoft. And, in my time at Microsoft, I was involved in some of these sort of groundbreaking projects. And the one in particular I remember was for pancreatic cancer. And one of the most difficult things about pancreatic cancer, it's one of the most difficult cancers to detect, and yet it's also one of the most important cancers to detect early if you want to maximize your chance of recovery. And what the researchers were able to do with machine learning, with some known patients who have pancreatic cancer, accessing their search data from the past few years with their permission,
yeah,
and actually going back to a point in time where the individual was not aware that they had pancreatic cancer, and they were able to basically bring all of that data together to improve the detection rate, the prediction of those people who are suffering with, just by looking at their so basically, if you imagine you've got a bunch of symptoms, you don't know what it is, you're on a search engine trying to find out what's wrong with you, using that information to then predict other people with similar symptoms who may have it's just amazing. And they're just two examples off the top of my head. I think they're going to see lots and lots going to happen in healthcare that will be driven by this ability to spot patterns in lots of data, machine learning essentially, that is really, really going to change things for us. And I think over the fullness of time, we're going to see some incredible breakthroughs. You know, I think there's some fantastic research going on in the cancer arena, the same with things like dementia.
No, definitely. Thank you so much for that. I think it's safe to say there's some huge opportunities, not just for marketeers, but for us all moving forward. And I guess just to wrap up, is there any kind of, you know, one or two kind of key resources that you suggest we take a look at around this topic? And also, you know, how can people find you online? You know, what's your Twitter handle, website address, all that good stuff?
Maybe I'm plug sure a couple of books.
Indeed, yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are going to want to learn more once they check out this episode.
So, I mean, I think the best way for people to engage a bit more on this topic is rather handily. I wrote a book about this called The Rise of the Humans, which, Tim, you know, I'm a cheap date. So you can actually download the book for free on Amazon if you have a Kindle, or actually tweet me. And you can tweet me at dcoplin, D-C-O-P-L-I-N, and I will send you a download link. And The Rise of the Humans, the book basically helps individuals with two things. Number one is developing a better personal relationship with technology. And then secondly, it really helps people understand this coming opportunity of a world of AI and machine learning and what they can do themselves to move further forward.
Cool. Great. I've got to go and read that.
I've read it. I highly recommend it. It's a great read. And as Dave mentioned, it is free on the on Kindle at the moment, which always helps. So good stuff. Well, thank you again, Dave, for spending time with us. I think all the listeners will agree that it's been super, super useful and informative. And my brain has practically exploded with all the possibilities here. So thank you so much. And yeah, we look forward to catching up soon.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for having us, guys.
Cheers, Dave. Thank you.
Take care.
Interesting bloke. He's definitely got his head round this whole AI stuff. It's going to be interesting to see how it all develops over the next couple of years.
For sure. So, yeah, so what, other than geeking out around AI and machine learning, getting ready for this this episode, what else have you been looking at over the last kind of week or so?
I guess the one that's kind of popped up on my radar, if you like, just kind of looking around, has been this new campaign Adobe are doing. Where they've kind of, they're really trying to tackle what it means to become an experience business. Adobe really talk about experiences being, you know, these personalized touch points across all mediums and channels and all that kind of stuff. That's the way that they kind of talk about it. And of course they would, they're in the digital marketing game, aren't they, with their marketing cloud. And one of the interesting things they're doing is the campaign's 100% programmatic. So they're looking at across all channels. So that includes like TV as well. So they're looking at, I'm sure, the TV element and the out-of-home element and audio they talk about actually. They're looking at how they can personalize all those experiences throughout. I'm sure TV's not probably the traditional platforms. It's going to be more, you know, the OTTs, and I know Sky have got some options around personalization of content and all that kind of stuff. But they're really looking about how can they drive the right message at the right time across every single channel. So there's a guy called John Watton, who I know from Adobe, who seems to be writing a little bit about it, so I think he'd definitely be a good guy to get on the show, maybe in you know, 2 or 3 months time, once the campaign starts rolling out the door and seeing how it's performing. But yeah, I'd definitely check it out if anyone's got the chance. It's on Adobe's blog, and the title of the blog is New Campaign Tackles What It Means to Become an Experienced Business. So I reckon it's definitely worth Googling that and going to find it. We'll make sure that we add it into our show notes as well, so you can get a link straight from the site.
Yeah, that sounds
anything
cool.
For you, Tim?
Yeah, there's a couple of things I've been kind of geeking out on over the last week or so. One of which probably isn't super appropriate for this audience. That's around Bitcoin. So I've been kind of re-looking into the whole cryptocurrency space at the moment. And yeah, I've kind of been thinking about doing some investments in the whole kind of space, and came across this really cool company called Genesis.
Okay.
And they actually do hosted Bitcoin mining. So I was looking into actually getting my own rig and kind of setting it all up at home. And then I thought, actually, yeah, my wife's probably not going to go for that. This like, rig kind of chugging away in the corner of the room. And yeah, it's not the most attractive looking thing in the world either. But yeah, there's a company called Genesis. And yeah, as I say, they do hosted Bitcoin mining. So you basically pay them a fee each month, and you can spin up as many rigs as you want. Obviously, the more rigs you have, the more expensive it gets. And yeah, they look after all of the hosting, the bandwidth, the electricity, you name it, they look after it. And obviously, you are paying them a fee to do that. And probably takes about 4 months, I guess, until you actually start really making any money. But yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a super volatile space at the moment. I mean, I've seen kind of Bitcoin going up literally like, you know, $1,000 a day in some cases. And I'm actually part of this really interesting cryptocurrency WhatsApp group where it's super, super active. Honestly, like you turn your back on the thing for a couple of hours and you come back and there's like 500 messages there. It's pretty insane. But yeah, I've been really kind of looking at that space at the moment. And I think I might do a little modest investment in this kind of managed Bitcoin kind of mining service. So that's one thing. And the other thing I've been reading up a lot on as well is around just the kind of personal assistant device space at the moment. So obviously Alexa's doing some cool stuff. You know, Google have got some pretty compelling products, and you've got obviously Apple as well coming out soon with the HomePod ready for Christmas. And I've been doing a lot of reading around the whole kind of like, you know, Alexa skills kind of space and all the rest of it, and what that means to marketeers. And I think, you know, there's some real white space there in terms of getting a presence on, you know, all of those platforms, arguably. And I guess kind of thinking more broadly, I think the opportunity for developers to do some really cool stuff, particularly when it comes to kind of like the emerging market kind of arena, you know, you've got arguably a kind of more illiterate kind of you know, population there, where perhaps traditional, you know, PCs, phones, etc., are going to be challenging because they can't. Jesus,
you die.
Yeah, just dying there.
Can you do it quietly, please?
Yeah, sorry about that. We can edit that out. And yeah, just going back to kind of the opportunity for the emerging markets. I think just kind of speaking to a device and what that would mean to people that perhaps, you know, can't read and write, it could be really interesting. So, yeah, I've been doing a lot of reading around that space at the moment, and I might even actually sign up to an Alexa skills course and just sort of start developing my own skills just to see what it's all about.
Right, mate, we better wrap up because we probably talked too long already. It's been a wicked first episode, man. I'm looking forward to number two. We're probably not going to end up getting an interview for episode number two, I guess, so we're going to have to come up with some content ourselves. God help the listener, all two of them at this stage.
Yeah, thanks, Mum.
Yeah. love it. But yeah, cheers, mate. It's been a wicked first episode. Really, really cool. Looking forward to the next one.
Good stuff. Thanks again, mate. I'll chat to you soon.
Laters. Thanks for listening to Real Marketing Wrap. And if you like what you heard, don't forget to share the word. You can follow Joe on Twitter at @BrandJoe and Tim at @TBush. Big shout out to DJ Tigerstyle for the music. You can check him out on djtigerstyle.com. For more about us, join our WhatsApp group. You can check that out on realmarketingwrap.com. Peace out, people, and keep it real till next time. The bloopers.
We're cool. Twiddling. We've gone back to twiddling knobs again.
We have, yeah. I'm always getting trouble with twiddling knobs, but there we go.
Yay! Hey.
Cool. So today, did you have a chance to look at the questions that I pinged over? It doesn't matter if not, because they're all pretty self-explanatory and stuff that you know loads about. He says confidently. So don't stress if you haven't. But yeah, just want to give it a chance to look.
Oh, he's gone.
Oh,
he gone on mute. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Dave.
No, he's definitely disappeared. Oh, he's just gone offline as well. So I reckon he had a dodgy connection or something. It's all right. That's what we're here for.
Indeed.
Stuff's going to happen.
Oh, I'm loving this technology.
Hey, he's back.
Let me guess, the wind changed. It happens. Awesome. So, yeah, did you have a chance to look at the questions at all that I pinged over?